I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
It's 8:08 on WCCO. Denny has the day off today. I'm Laura Oakes from the news department filling in for him. And I'm not one of those gardening experts that the voice guy just referred to. So I am so glad that we are joined this morning by from Master Gardener Teresa Rooney. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Laura. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Nice to be with you, too. Now, today I was thinking we could chat houseplants a little bit because we've kind of reached that point in the year where maybe they're not looking so good after we've overwintered a few things. Maybe it's time to get them outside or refresh the soil or that kind of stuff. So we want your calls and questions for Teresa, really about anything having to do with your plants or your lawn or how to care for things or how to get started on something. That number to call is 651-461-9226. I also want to ask Teresa a little bit about breaking out of the same old flowers that we plant every year because maybe we're afraid to branch out a little bit. And I'm also considering trying to grow a couple of vegetables this year. I have no idea how to do that. So let's get started with that one, Teresa. If somebody wanted to start planning for somewhat of even just a small vegetable garden this spring, what should they be doing right now?
Laura, this is an excellent time to do that. I know lots of us just have snow on the ground, but what you can do now is, first of all, think of the vegetable you want to eat. People always used to ask, what vegetable should I plant? And I thought, well, the ones you like. Like, I don't think I like okra, so I'm not going to plant okra. But I might love lettuce, so I'm going to plant lettuce. So think of the two or three vegetables that you might want to eat. Then go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, and you can find out, how do I start vegetables? Do I have to start them inside? Can I buy just seeds and plant them in the ground? Can I plant them? Can I buy starts from a nursery and then just plant those little tiny baby plants out there? But first of all, think of the vegetables you like to eat, and then go to the Extension website with your cup of tea or coffee and just explore a little bit. Then what I want you to do is look outside your window and think of your garden or your yard. If you have a garden already, that's wonderful if you have a veggie garden. But if you don't have a veggie garden, maybe you live in an apartment or you just live in an HOA and you have a tiny patio and that's the only place you can plant, then you want to think, can I grow my plants in containers? Yes, many vegetables can grow in containers quite well. So then again, the Extension website has a lot of great information on that. You could go and you could get some inexpensive plastic pots, the bigger the better, and some potting soil, and then that's where you would plant your vegetables. But before all of that, or after all of that, if you don't have a garden, you've never gardened before, what I want you to do is look outside your windows, or wander through your yard a little bit. We've just gotten some fresh snow, lots of us. So this is a wonderful way to check out our yards. And you can tell by watching, how quick does that snow melt in my yard? Where does the water go in my yard? That will give you some ideas about, the snow melted really fast in this area because it's a bright, sunny spot. The snow on my north side of the house is still there in the end of May because it's really cold there and shady. So you want full sun or as much sun as you can for your vegetables. And then you can proceed about, how am I going to plant my vegetables in this nice, sunny spot? It's way too early to plant them outside with seeds right now. But you can start seeds in the house. Many of our cool crops, the crops that like cooler weather, these will be a lot of your salad greens, your kale, collards, things that you grow for the green leaves. It also includes some peas, wonderful cool season crops. Those can grow and go in the ground pretty early, maybe toward the end of this month, middle of next month. You can actually put the seeds in the ground. Things like tomatoes, you do have to start them in the house, or you do have to buy little tomatoes that are already growing in the garden centers. And then you wait till after Memorial Day when the soil is nice and warm, and then you can plant those in the warm soil. They are warm season crops. So those things like squashes and peppers and eggplant and tomatoes, those are all warm season crops. Cucumbers, all of those crops where you're going to eat the fruit or the actual vegetable, not the leaves, a lot of those crops will be your warm season crops. That's just a little quick thing. Don't make it harder than it has to be. Don't decide I'm going to rip up my entire yard and plant 40 acres of vegetables. Just start really small if you're beginning. Try one new plant. Maybe you've never grown tomatoes before. You can go ahead and grow a tomato. Or you've never grown cucumbers before. You can grow a small cucumber plant. Lots of these plants also come in bush varieties, so you can grow them in a container, and they don't have a vine that runs 20, 30 feet. So there's a lot of fun things you can do. A lot of master gardeners teach classes online or offer classes at your library, so check there. The Extension website will also tell you where there's classes, or go to your local Extension office, county website, and see if they have any classes for you, because there's amazing classes coming up. That's just a little quick one.
Yes. Thank you very much for that advice, Teresa, and for keeping things so simple for those of us who might be a little bit intimidated about vegetables or flowers, for that matter. I want to back up just a little bit, because you mentioned that pretty soon we actually could get a few things in the ground, like kale or collards or some of those greens.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid to put anything in the ground because of the bunnies in my yard.
So
can you grow those lettuces in a pot somewhere?
Yes, you can grow those lettuces in a pot. And then you can even add a little fence on the top of the pot where you've planted your seeds, so it makes it even harder for the bunnies to get into. But you hit one of the most important things to think about, Laura. You are so smart. You're a gardener, even if you don't think you are. Before you put anything in the ground, make sure you figured out how you're going to protect it from whatever kind of pests you have, whether that's bunnies or squirrel or deer or little children that shouldn't be eating certain things yet. Just how can you protect it? And usually we have to rely on fences. So just understand chicken wire or hardware cloth is your friend, and just adapt to it. Just understand, it may not look so pretty. Maybe next year I can spray paint it. I can add ribbons. I can add tulle, whatever. I can make it my own. I can make it pretty. This year it's going to be pretty utilitarian. And put those fences up first, before you put the snacks out. Because if you put the snacks out first and then try to put a fence out, the critters will find a way over, under, or around it, and they will get to it. So you just want to, nothing to see here, nothing to see here, so they don't even realize there's delicious lettuces and kale and collards over there.
I love that. It reminds me how I'm trying to train our new puppy. Nothing to see here, who wants to go after every single thing she sees, and person, and other dog. So thank you for that.
And your pets could be one of those pests that you have to kind of think about. Yep.
Exactly. All right, let's go to the text line, Teresa. We have a lot of them starting to come in.
Excellent.
I had a PG hydrangea tree planted last spring. Do I trim off the blossoms? And if so, when?
You can trim those blossoms off whenever you want. I would always say go to the Extension website. That's extension.umn.edu. Julie and her crew had put together a fantastic, when do I trim these certain hydrangeas? Because when you trim your hydrangeas can influence how many flowers you can get on your hydrangeas, or if you're cutting off the buds that are there already. So go to the Extension website. But yes, you can take off those brown faded flowers, send them to your compost bin. Just do some judicious pruning on it and clean it up, so it's going to be all fresh and ready for its next season of growth.
Okay, great. It is fun to talk flowers and hydrangeas and brightly colored, beautiful things on this gray day, gray, slushy, wet day. Teresa, we need to take a break now. It's 8:17 on WCCO Radio. We're listening to Smart Gardens with Teresa Rooney. She's with the U of M Extension Service. Please call or text us if you have any questions. That number is 651-461-9226. Back in a moment. Good morning. It's 8:20 on WCCO Radio. I'm Laura Oakes, in for Denny Long this morning. Denny will be back next week. You're listening to Smart Gardens with Teresa Rooney from the University of Minnesota Extension Service. And before we jump back into our calls and texts, Teresa, I just want to bring up a few things that are coming up at the Arboretum. And first of all, the flower show going on for one more week. And then I saw something on the website that Maple Fest is coming up on March 21st. Now, this is a pancake breakfast with maple syrup, where you can learn all about maple syruping. And this sounds like something right up my alley. What do you know about Maple Fest?
I know it's wonderful. They harvest the syrup from the maples. I believe they've started tapping trees now. So as the sap actually rises in the trees, they actually tap it. And then usually it's a 40-to-1 boil down. So they have to harvest 40 gallons of this sap, and then they need to boil it down to 1 gallon to get maple syrup. So that's a lot of work. So if you've ever purchased real maple syrup, that might tell you why it's so expensive.
For sure.
There's lots of other trees that you can tap if you don't have a maple tree in your yard. There are other kinds of trees you can tap. The sap will take a little bit different, taste a little different. Some are even up to a 60-to-1. So you have to harvest 60 gallons to get 1 gallon of syrup. So it just depends. But yes, so they harvest the sap right on the Arboretum grounds, and then it's a wonderful breakfast. I believe you do have to get reservations and tickets early. It's not like come and you
right.
can eat the pancakes, because everybody wants to eat the pancakes. Oh, pancakes sound delicious. So and then with real maple syrup on them, it's just a wonderful event. And the Arb is just filled with wonderful events. If you can't wait till April, you could go out there and learn how to do some Irish cooking, because we do have St. Patrick's Day coming up. And again, you mentioned the spring flower show. That's a wonderful event too. So get out there and get some beautiful flowers, views of flowers in your eyes. Visit the conservatory and just enjoy the smell of the plants and see the orchids that are blooming in. And before you go to the Arb, if you're going to be doing any skiing or driving on Three Mile Drive, always check the trail first. They'll give you a trail guides and let you know what's open and what isn't, so you're not disappointed.
There is so much going on at the Arb all throughout the year, and it's so funny because just yesterday a photo popped up on my iPad of Chris, my husband, and I at the Winter Holiday Lights event last year at the Arboretum. And then I came across another photo. This was an old one, I think from about 1980, with me and my sister on bikes on this forced Christmas card photo shoot that my mom used to make us do. We both look so crabby and like it's the last place we want to be. And I'll tell you, Teresa, I put some of these photos on our website, WCCO Radio Facebook page, actually. Mm-hmm. For some of the things I'm referring to this morning, they're conjuring up these memories. And so people know what I'm talking about. I added a few photos. So if you go to the WCCO Radio Facebook page, you will see what I'm talking about with these two surly teenagers with forced posing in the beautiful fall colors at the Arboretum for a Christmas card, probably around 1980. And there's one of Chris and I at the beautiful winter lights display last year. So much going on. Yeah.
And those memories are there. It's a great place to share with people coming in to the community, visiting you. A nice place to take visitors and just show them one of the gems of our state here. It's wonderful.
Yep. All right, back to the text line. With the weird warm temperatures we've been having, my lilacs have buds already. I'm guessing this doesn't bode well for blooms this year. Oh, tell me that is not true.
Oh, actually, your lilacs have had those buds since last July. Those little buds have been waiting since last July, which is why we don't prune our spring blooming plants right away, because then you'd be cutting off all the flowers. So what happens is those buds are filled with the closest thing is like antifreeze. It's not antifreeze, but the buds stay protected by this fluid, by this chemical in the buds for a really long time. As the buds start to swell, there's less and less of that fluid, and eventually you reach the point where there's no more fluid left. So if we get a really bad frost or something like that happens, then the flowers may die and you won't get any flowers. However, lilacs are used to our weird weather. Well, not as used to our weird weather. They're used to the cold. So even if those buds were almost ready to open, we could get a snow like today and it wouldn't hurt them at all, because it just doesn't stick around long enough on the plant itself to hurt the plant. So have faith. It should be okay. And actually, there's nothing you can do about it anyway. But you could just understand those buds have been there for almost, 8 months already. So they've gone through our cold winter that we've already had. So they're still protected. Mother Nature is protecting them, and we should be fine with lilacs unless something really weird happens. But this is fine. There's no big deal.
Good to know. I want to take it back inside to houseplants for just a minute. And I am so proud of myself, Teresa, because last spring, my nephew, who graduated from the University of Minnesota, he had to do a school project. And his project involved handing out seeds for Monstera plants.
Oh,
the indoor
goodness.
Monstera plant.
Wow.
And I was, of course, intimidated because I don't have a green thumb. And I thought, well, what could go wrong? I'm going to try to plant these seeds. I'm going to follow his little directions and just plant the seed indoors in a small pot and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I watered it, and I made sure it was in the sun, and nothing was happening. And then sure enough, the little shoots came up. And
oh,
then
exciting.
It you should see it now. It's, I'm not going to say it's huge because I know I need to repot it into a larger pot. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually growing a houseplant from seed for the very first time in my life. And it's possible, and it's so encouraging to me. And I just wanted to share that. So
That's a congratulations
to you.
That's amazing because most of us don't grow houseplants from seed.
No.
But that's amazing. And it just shows you that people have been growing plants for a number of years. I mean, we've had to grow our food for a number of years. So you can do this. It's not a hard thing. It's a little step by step. And if you make a mistake, you learn from it and you just go on from there. But I'm so excited. And you want to think, do I really need to transplant that Monstera now? That's a good thing. This is the time of year when we're starting to get a lot more sun. The plants are starting to grow a little bit. This is a really good time to check those houseplants. Make sure they're not dusty. Clean them off with a damp cloth. To check, do they need to be repotted? If you can give them some more light gently, do that. And the Extension website has all kinds of tips about whether or not you want to transplant. And you always want to use the soil that's appropriate to the houseplant. If it's a cactus, use cactus soil. If it's an orchid and it's a non-terrestrial orchid, then you use the bark and you're growing it in bark. If it's a regular houseplant, you can just use regular potting soil. You never use soil from the garden, but use potting soil. And then you always go up just one pot size. You never want to go up too big.
Okay.
You want to make those roots work as much as they can, and then you give them a little bigger pot. You never want to go from, a one-bedroom apartment to a 50-bedroom mansion. You just upgrade tiny bits at a time. Otherwise, your plants just do roots, 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 and they don't really do much foliage above. And
gotcha.
It takes too long for them to catch up.
All right, back to the text line. How warm does it have to be outside before I can put my green plants on my front porch?
Okay, so first of all, think about your plants. They have been inside being babied all winter long, so they're not used to the harsh sun. They're not used to wind. They're not used to cool temperatures. So you want to make sure if you're going to put them outside that you do it on a warm day. I'd say at least 50 to 60 degrees. I'd probably aim for 55 to 65 degrees. And then you want to put them in a shady area. And you want to do this for maybe a week or two. And bring them in at night. If it drops under 40 or 50 degrees, you want to bring them in at night. But that gets them used to that brighter sunshine. Otherwise, you can put them out in the bright sun, and they may get sunburned. They may even die. It's just too harsh of a condition at first. So that's called conditioning our plants or getting them ready, hardening them off. You might have heard of that term, too. That gets them used to being outside. It's like us having to put sunscreen on. We have to protect our leaves. So you don't put sunscreen on them, but you just get them used to being in the outside weather with the sun and the wind. And then you can move them into the kind of sunshine that they will like. If it's a cactus, they like full sun. If it's a fern, they might like to stay in the shady area. And then once the temperatures stay above 60, even during the nighttime, then you can probably leave them outside. And just watch them because they may need more water or less water. And just watch them after that. But if it's just a really nice day and you have a slightly shady area and it's 60 degrees, set them outside for a few hours and just let them start to get used to being out there in the sunshine.
Love it. Baby steps.
Baby steps.
Yeah, great. It is 8:30 on WCCO. We're listening to Smart Gardens, chatting with Teresa Rooney from the University of Minnesota Extension Service. Check it out. Their website has so much helpful information, and that is extension.umn.edu. We need to take a break. We'll be back with more of your calls and texts after this. Ryan, I'm digging your bumper music.
Well, you sent me a very comprehensive list here of great selections, so
Thank
I'm just
you.
Going through it here. It's
Thank
awesome.
You. This is the music I plug into my ears when I get out for my afternoon walks every day, and I swear it is a mood changer. Within 10 minutes, it's the best part of my day.
Well, thank
Love
you for bringing it to us.
Yes.
You know, we usually just go ahead. It's a little just straight to business here when Denny's in. So we'll be straight to business next week when he's back. But we'll have fun for now.
Thanks for playing my tunes. And I'm going to tell you about this really awesome idea I have for a huge downtown Minneapolis dance party during the workday to the music just like that. So thank you. All right. You are listening to Smart Gardens with Teresa Rooney from the University of Minnesota Extension Service, taking your calls and texts at 651-461-9226. We have Bill on the line from St. Paul. Bill, what's your question?
Hey, we're building a house, and we're required to have a couple of catch basins on the property in a sandy soil, and I'm wondering what kinds of plants. We like irises, but we want some interest in the color in the summer and interest in the winter. And if you have any suggestions as to what we might plant in those basins.
Sure, Bill, that's exciting. You're building a house, that's exciting. What I would look at, and I would look at rain garden plants and trees and shrubs. There are some wonderful shrubs you could put in there that could give you some winter interest. There are some grasses you could add in there that could give you some winter interest. And then there's a lot of flowering plants that will help those catch basins grab the water, hold the water, keep it on your property, and then filter it down to our aquifers. So rain garden plants are what you're looking for. And you'll find that there's a lot of plants, they may say, a native something or another. If you don't really like the look of a native, but you like the idea of that plant, then you can go with something that's more hybridized, and that will work just fine too. So you don't have to do strict natives in there. The natives will work better, but the hybridized plants will work better too. With your irises, if you're going to plant irises, I would plant them near the upper levels or on top of your catch basins, because you don't want those big thick iris tubers or roots to actually sit in the water, unless you're doing Siberian irises. They could possibly go at the bottom of your catch basin. But rain gardens would be what you want to look for. So there's a lot of wonderful ideas. Metro Blooms, Blue Thumb Guide, they have some great ideas. It's a local group that does a lot of rain gardens, and they do the lawns to legumes and things like that. So that could be really good. We also have a book that you can download online for free, and it's called The Best Plants for 30 Tough Sites. And you can actually find 3 pages of rain garden plants there for you. But research rain gardens. Good luck.
All right. Thanks, Teresa. Thanks for the call, Bill. And let's get back to the text line, Teresa. Is it too late to prune our apple tree?
I would prune it as quickly as you possibly can, at least by the middle of this month, if possible. There's plants you want to prune early in the spring or late winter. Things like your oaks you need pruned by the end of the month. I would probably put my apple trees in there too. It's getting pretty warm, so I'd get your pruning done as quickly as possible for your fruit trees, along with your elms. And ashes, anything like that that could be susceptible to insect problems or disease problems. So oaks, elms, ashes, fruit trees, get them all done as quickly as you possibly can.
All right. And speaking of oak trees, we have a couple of questions regarding those. Our oak tree dropped all of its leaves after it snowed, the lawn was raked. Now the yard has a wet carpet of oak leaves. Will this ruin the grass this spring, and how should we care for it? Also, is it too late to have oak trees cut down and trimmed?
Now is when you want to prune your oaks. So get everything done with your oaks that you're doing above ground. Get that done by the end of the month as quickly as possible. If you contact a good tree service, they will tell you if it's too late in your area to prune oaks. So that will help you. As for the leaves that have fallen on the ground, that's what oaks like to do. Some of those little rascals hold on to those leaves for so long. So what you can do is, if you can gently rake the leaves up off of the soil now, if they're frozen to the soil, just wait. And then when you can get out there, when the soil starts to warm up and it dries out a little bit, you don't want to be ever being raking wet soil, then you can gently rake those leaves up. If you just leave those leaves on the soil, depending upon how thick they are, yes, they will kill your grass. However, it won't kill your grass immediately, so you can just gently lift them up once the ground thaws out, it's no longer frozen, and once it dries out, then you can gently, very gently rake those leaves up and then put them in your compost bin or dispose of them as you need to with your city compost or however you normally take care of them.
Excellent. Another text question. I'm going to make a raised 8x10 flower bed for the outside. What is the best dirt to use to fill that large of a base? I can tell you what not to do. Don't use dirt from your lawn and just throw it in the box.
No.
Yeah. Guess who did that and who didn't have the greatest results, Teresa?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That soil is pretty compacted and compromised out there.
Yes.
So what you want to do is rather than an 8x10, if you could do or how you want it, I want you to be able to reach all edges of your garden without actually walking on it. So if you can figure out how to do that, maybe you put one path down the middle, a little winding path down the middle, and you reach from the side there. That way, once you get the soil all in there and you're growing your plants, you never step on that soil again, so you never have to compress it so it doesn't become compacted. It's nice and fluffy for the plants. There, you can buy raised garden bed soil from your local nursery, so contact them. Be prepared for sticker shock because the soil itself might not be as expensive, but the hauling it to get it there, they will dump off a cubic yard or 2 cubic yards, however much you need. They will tell you how much you will need. They can figure that math out for you if you just tell them how deep you are putting your beds and the size. They'll figure it out. They'll figure out the volume that you need. But be prepared. It's going to be kind of spendy, the first investment that you put in. But if you get some good raised bed soil from a local garden center that you trust, talk to a few of them. Talk to your neighbors if they have raised beds, how they've done that. And that's what you want. You don't want garden soil. You don't want topsoil in there. You need fluffier soil for your raised beds.
Good luck
with that.
Yeah. Another soil question. What is the best way to dispose of used potting soil?
You know, if you have any gardens in your yard, any plants in your yard, you can just set them, you could just pull back mulch around your trees or around your bushes and put your potting soil out there if it hasn't been terribly diseased or something like that. It's not so compromised that it's not good anymore. But you can do that. Just put it in thin layers and then put the mulch back over and it'll work its way into the soil. If you have a garden bed, a veggie bed, you could use the potting soil in there. If it hasn't been filled with maybe your plants died because of a bad disease, then you probably want to just contact your city. How can I dispose of the soil? Can I put it in with my yard waste or what? Otherwise, just keep it on your property and help build up your garden soil out there somewhere.
Okay, super. Keep your questions coming, folks. Text or call 651-461-9226. It is 8:44 already, and we do need to take a break. We're talking with Teresa Rooney on Smart Gardens on WCCO Radio back after this. That's my wake-up song this morning, Ryan Perpich.
Wow.
I had it cranked in the car. I needed to get my energy up, and I love it. It's one of my favorites, Commodores. It's 8:46 on WCCO. This is Laura Oakes in for Denny Long today. Denny will be back next week, and you are listening to Smart Gardens. Our master gardener this week is Teresa Rooney with all kinds of great advice for your lawn and garden questions. Call us 651-461-9226. And Teresa will do her best to set you straight. We have Mark on the line from Hudson. Mark, what's your question?
I have a question about trying to grow oak trees from acorns. To take a bucket of acorns and plant them, or plant them in a row like corn, get them to grow the first year or two, and then transplant them. Well, how would you go about growing a bunch of red or white oak trees?
Mark, that's a great idea. And yes, you can do that very easily. What you'd want to do is get the acorns once they've fallen from the ground, from the trees. And when you're ready to plant them, if you can nick the surface just a little bit with a nail file or some sandpaper, that will help to speed up the germination. And then plant them. I'd say plant them about, imagine one little acorn on top of the acorn that you're planting. You just want to start getting them going in your nursery bed. Go ahead and plant them out. Protect them from the critters, and they will grow there. And in 2 or 3 years, whenever you're ready to transplant them, just dig deeply around the roots, even if it's just 1 year. Dig deeply, as deep as you can, and pull that little acorn transplant up and go ahead and plant it out at the same depth it was growing already. Don't plant them any deeper, and go ahead and plant them out in your, wherever you want to, in your landscape, and just keep them watered, protect them the first 1 or 2 years from critters, maybe put some chicken wire around them so that the kids don't knock balls into them, the puppy doesn't run over them, the mailman doesn't walk on them, whatever, the deer don't nibble them down. Once they're up and growing, and just go from there, and that's a great idea. You may want to double check which oaks are going to do best in your area. If they're already growing there, they should be fine. However, you do want to double check how susceptible those oaks are to things like oak wilt. You don't want to plant the ones that are really super susceptible to oak wilt and then have to worry so much all the time, is this going to work or not for me? So good luck, Mark. That sounds excellent.
Thanks for the call, Mark, and thanks, Teresa. I have just a little sweet little story to share, if it's okay. This won't take much time. But, you know, my last name is Oakes. So I'm a little partial to acorns, and I have to tell you about the sweetest gift that came from my mom to our baby son when he was born almost 24 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little, I think it was stainless steel or just sterling silver, tiny little acorn with a note on it that said, "From little acorns grow mighty oaks."
Mighty oaks, yep. I love oak
and
acorns,
still has
too.
It.
That's adorable.
Yeah, it's just so meaningful and cool and sweet. So that's
it is.
That's my little
that's
acorn.
That's a sweet story.
Thank
that's
you.
That's a sweet story.
Okay, back to the text line. I have a new Prairie Cascade willow I planted last fall after losing a 23-year-old tree in storms last summer. I see two of the top branches turned black, and I want to know when I can trim them off or what precautions to take.
You can trim those right now. Dead is dead. It's never coming back. So if you ever have any dead limbs on or branches on a plant, go ahead and trim them back. If you think it's a disease, which this is probably not, it's probably just damage from the weather, you would want to sterilize your pruners between each cut and then sterilize your pruners as you leave so you don't bring that to any other plant. But in this case, just go ahead and trim off the black stuff. That's just fine. You can do that any time of the year would be fine. Dead is dead. It's not coming back. On a big tree or a big plant, you want to get that dead branches out of there so they don't fall and break other branches as they fall. So go ahead and take those off, and good luck with your new plant. That's exciting.
I just want to pass along a very helpful text from one of our listeners, and this goes to show just what a wonderful community we have here on this show, Teresa.
They are smart.
Yeah, and this is regarding the guy who called about the rain garden and the great advice that you gave. This texter says that they suggest that he contact his city environmental department to see if they offer any rebates for installing rain gardens, and that their city used to do it back when they did theirs. So,
yep.
Good point.
Yep. And here I live in Minneapolis, and I know I get a break on my on part of my one of my bills from the city because I have very little concrete in my yard. It's all planted up with trees and shrubs and things like that. So and rain gardens, as you're funneling that water, you're helping your city. So yes, do check for that.
Super. What kind of weed control product can I use on a very large pumpkin patch?
First of all, you need to figure out why you need weed control. You know, just pulling the weeds and just cleaning up that area is usually the best. That's what I would think, first of all, to clear it up. And why do you have to use a weed control unless something just got out of hand? And if something got out of hand, maybe it's filled with a quack grass or something like that, then I would go to my local garden center. I probably wouldn't go to a big box store. I would go to more of a garden center because they will have people very knowledgeable about specific problems, and then tell them what weeds you are fighting and what weeds are the problem there if you can't manually pull them out, and they will help you find the right product. Because if you're going to replant pumpkins there, you do want to make sure that that weed control will not impact your pumpkin growth and will not kill the plants that you're going to be planting in, whether it's from seed or from transplants. So I would figure out what you're trying to kill and what you're trying to get rid of. And if you're not going to do a mulch or a manual pulling, then I would concentrate on that, whether it's a grass or whether it's a broadleaf weed. There's different products that work in different areas on different plants.
All right. Here is a great question as we're looking toward our spring blooms and our bulbs. Is it too late to force tulips and daffodils in pots?
I would say yes, because they take 13 to 15 weeks in cold storage to trigger that bulb to actually grow for you. And that puts you out, you know, way into the summer, and that's way past their time to go. If, however, you have some bulbs that you didn't plant, put them in a container, throw it in the fridge, you know, for as many weeks as you possibly can with no apples in your fridge, and then go ahead and plant them, put those containers out and see if you get any growth from that. But yeah, it's probably 2 weeks too late to force them, unless you can buy pre-chilled bulbs, and that's what they do in the South. They don't have the cold temps usually, so they have to buy pre-chilled bulbs to get those spring blooms.
What's the deal with apples? Why no apples in your fridge?
Oh, that's a good question. Apples release an ethylene gas that actually can, when it gets to the bulbs, because your fridge circulates the air, it gets to the bulbs and it actually can deform the bulbs, so they may not flower, or the flowers may be deformed or really awful looking.
That is your fun fact for the day, folks, right?
Yep.
Who would know that?
Yep. So you don't store, that's why you don't normally store apples with things like, you know, potatoes and that. Well, there's different storage anyway, because the ethylene gas helps everything ripen or may impact other plants that are around it.
Don't you want to keep them crisp, though, in the fridge, kind of crisp and cold?
Yeah, so that's why you could store your apples in the fridge, but you wouldn't want to store your potatoes. Or if you have just some apples on the counter and you notice, gee, my oranges go by so quick when the apples are there, or you're in a sealed container. You know, lots of times there's a lot of air circulation if we've got them on the counter, so that's not a big deal. So you don't have to worry about coming in and all your houseplants are dead. That's not going to happen. But in that enclosed area of your fridge, the ethylene gas can really mess with that. And lots of our fruits that come in, they're actually force-fed ethylene gas to help them ripen because they're picked so green.
Wow. That is just some life-changing information, I have got to say. Thank you so much. One more question. Selfishly, this is me again, and I want to get it in before we're done. Keeping an orchid alive. I swear to God, I have tried 15, 20 times. I just buy the cheap orchids at Trader Joe's, put them where they're supposed to go, and I can't keep them alive. I'm doing the ice cube trick, ice cube. The whole thing. What am I doing wrong?
So Orchids, the Phalaenopsis or the moth orchids, those are usually the ones we get. They are really easy to grow. What you want to make sure is that they are potted in wood chips. They don't have any soil on them. And I would just take that container to the sink every Saturday or every Monday morning or Monday when you get home from work and it's been a stressful thing. You just need something to, some little task to help you regulate and relax again. And just, you know, let some water go over the wood chips and get those wood chips nice and damp. Let it drain really well in the sink and then put it back. The orchids just are, they're growing, they're non-terrestrial. So they're just growing on the bark and that's what's holding them up. The bark is just there to hold them up and you do need that moisture around them. If you are using the ice cubes, make sure the ice cubes aren't sitting on any of the roots and that will help. There may not be enough ice cubes. That may not be enough moisture. Our homes in the wintertime are so dry and warm that that moisture could disappear really quickly. So maybe you just need to do that. Maybe instead of once a week, it's twice a week if you're doing the ice cube thing. And they should be just fine.
Yeah, easy for you to say, Miss Teresa. I'm going to go home today and regulate and relax with my orchid and hope that what you have taught me will give me some more success this time. All right, before we wrap up, I just want to make sure folks are aware of both the Extension website and the Arboretum website. So you want to give us the addresses?
Sure. I usually just Google Minnesota Arboretum because I'm lazy that way. I make Google do all the work, and then I just put in extension.umn.edu and go to the Yard and Garden and maybe bookmark those pages so you have them all the time. And it's been great talking to you today, Laura.
You too. Thank you for all of the great advice as we head into spring, and I hope we'll chat again soon. Thanks, Teresa.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You bet. Stay tuned, everybody. We have the Home Improvement Show with Andy Lindis coming up.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.